thank you for accommodating us and moving us a little forward on Avery Pharmaceuticals versus Haynes and Boone. After we hear arguments on this case, we will go back to the second case on the docket. We understand Mr. Christian is on his way. So, if the clerk will please announce counsel for Avery and Haynes and Boone.
May I please report, Ms. Cheryl Schultz will argue for appellants. Mr. Marshall Searcy will argue for appellees.
Thank you. All right, Ms. Schultz.
May it please the court, counsel for Haynes and Boone. My name is Cheryl Schultz, and I'm here representing Avery Pharmaceuticals and Al Sankrey. I have the first thing I'd like to do with permission of the court is there's some new case law not cited in my brief, which I would like to point out to the court, and I was in the process of preparing a letter brief, but my community was evacuated for Hurricane Gustav for 5 days, and so I had part of the research done, and having lost my home in 2005 with Rita, I was a little leery, so I left.
Well, so, you can submit a post-submission letter brief and just make that available to the clerk's office and to opposing counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. May I briefly give the court those sites?
Sure.
The first one is in reference to standing. It's called Stanku versus Stalcup, and it clarifies that it is Haynes and Boone who has the burden, not the plaintiffs, on the attorney-client privilege. And it is 127 Southwest 3rd, 429, out of the Dallas court, and there's no petition on that one. The second one is Sotelo versus Stewart, 2008 Westlaw, 217-4425, out of the El Paso court in May of 08. There is a petition filed in that case. That explains the Tanix versus Akin Gump case relied upon by Haynes and Boone's, that when the existence of an attorney-client relationship is disputed, the duty element is a question of fact. The third case is Fairfield Insurance Company versus Stevens Martin Paving. That reiterates the assignment policy concerns of the assignment of a legal malpractice case out of the Texas Supreme Court in February of 2008, and that was delivered by and joined in by all of the justices except for one, and written by Justice Wainwright. The next one is on fracturing and allowing other causes of action, and that is Duerr, D-U-E-R-R, versus Brown, 2008 Westlaw 2606713 out of Houston 14th Court on July the 3rd of 2008. The next one is on negligent misrepresentation. It's Gordon versus Gordon, July 31st, 2008 case out of the Beaumont Court. The next one is Medical Air Services Association versus Kiebert, and that is on the no double recovery, which distinguishes weight, W-A-I-T-E, relied on by Haynes and Boone's in reference to different causes of action in their recovery. And I apologize again for not getting that to the court. The next thing that I have, that I've prepared for the court, I prepared a summary of what we believe are the highlights in the case, the dates, and I handed that to the deputy. I believe the court has that, and I provided it to counsel. It's just factual. There's no argument in there. I did take the license to abbreviate Haynes and Boone with HB and their other client, John Vervink, with VV, and I hope I did not plan on just giving that to y'all, but again, my time was cut short, and I apologize. This is not the first time that the facts in this case, which are really quite extensive, have come before this court and this panel, and it's advantageous that you have somewhat of a background because it is so voluminous, but the two dates I'd like to concentrate on that demand that this case be remanded and reversed in a trial by jury is the first date, February the 20th of 2002, where Haynes and Boone's other client, Mr. Vervink, was actually enjoined from participating, working, or even being a part of Avery Pharmaceuticals, and there's a dispute as to whether Mr. Sankrey knew that or did not know that, which is one of the factual issues in this case. The second date is that it didn't expire for 18 months. So it expired in near the end of August, the beginning of September of 2003. It's that period of time where we allege that a complex group of business transactions and corporate formations were instituted and concocted and actually drafted by Haynes and Boone's to the injury to Alf Sankrey and Avery Pharmaceuticals that compel reversal and remand. What this case is not about, which is what Haynes and Boone's would like this court to focus on, is assignment. They would like this court to be the one that comes out in Texas and says you can sell a business and sell a legal malpractice cause of action. This court does not have to reach that, because that's not what this case is about. It's not about a release in another case that gets them off the hook in this case. It's not about a ratification of conduct. It's about misconduct. There are so many facts in this case that that's what this court should be compelled to look at and discuss, not affirmative defenses to absolve them of liability and immunize them from responsibility. We would like to show the court the facts, point out maybe six, maybe eight transactions that show this court exactly what happened. And the first one that I'd like to focus on and have this court understand is that Haynes and Boone's represented Vervinc, no doubt about that. They represented Avery Pharmaceuticals, no doubt about that. They represented Al Sankrey. That's a disputed fact issue. If they didn't represent him, they certainly negligently misrepresented that they represented him, and they didn't tell him they didn't until he took them on about it, and they said they anticipated litigation at that point. But a month later, they still admitted, we represent Avery Pharmaceuticals, who's also a party to this case. Avery Pharmaceuticals was a corporation already in existence when Haynes and Boone's came into the picture. Al Sankrey was Avery's CEO. Al Sankrey was the majority shareholder. Vervinc was never chief executive officer of Avery Pharmaceuticals, regardless of papers drafted by Haynes and Boone's that said he was, and he signed off as such. He wasn't. He also never could have participated in these transactions that we've listed on that summary, the first one being the formation of his sole company called Avery Wholesale Pharmaceuticals, which in March of 2002, just shortly after the injunction, Haynes and Boone's drafted, a 30-year lawyer with Haynes and Boone's, drafted the incorporating papers for this company that was owned solely by Mr. Vervinc. Now, Sankrey testified that he thought he owned part of it. There were other employees that said they thought it was a subsidiary or an umbrella underneath it. It clearly was not. Once discovery commenced in the case, and that's another big thing, another big issue before this court, is that there could have been no assignment because Al Sankrey didn't know. Now, they dispute this, but the facts are such that the misconduct did not start becoming apparent against Mr. Vervinc until they started negotiating, Haynes and Boone's and Mr. Vervinc did, to sell this company, not to who they did sell it to, but to a company called Standard Management. There was a loss in that sale, because that's when Mr. Sankrey found out about it and started talking to Haynes and Boone's about it and said, well, you know, what are you trying to do here? They had represented to Standard Management that it was Vervinc who could sell that company. Vervinc at that time was enjoined, had transferred his stocks. And that's another thing. And this is really egregious. There was a stock purchase agreement drawn up by Haynes and Boone's by one of their individual lawyers and supervised by another individual lawyer, both sued by Mr. Sankrey and Avery Pharmaceuticals, that was signed by Vervinc as the president and chief executive officer in March of 2002, simultaneously with that Avery Wholesale Pharmaceuticals, after the injunction, to get around the injunction. That's our contention. They dispute it. What happened in that case is Mr. Fickling was an employee who came down from Alabama with Mr. Vervinc and went to work for Mr. Sankrey and Avery Pharmaceuticals. What happened was Mr. Vervinc signed his shares over to Mr. Fickling because he was enjoined from participating in this medical vial business. Well, Mr. Fickling testified that, yes, I became president, and yes, he gave me his shares, but nothing I ever did changed. And Mr. Sankrey says, I didn't know about it. I wasn't told about it. Now, that's a disputed fact issue, grant you. But the point is, Mr. Vervink had no authority to execute any document at all, much less to violate corporate documents that stated, if you sell, Mr. Vervink, then you must give Mr. Sankrey the first right of refusal. Did he do that? No. In his deposition, they asked him, why didn't you do that? He said, I'd have never gotten them back. Mr. Fickling testified that as soon as the injunction was to expire 18 months later, he was mandated to give the stock back to Mr. Vervink and give Mr. Vervink his interest back. That's the facts. The next thing they knew about that Mr. Sankrey did not know about was that in June of 2002, without a real conflicts check, they incorporated another business solely for Mr. Vervink called Infinity Custom Plastics. And their lawyers testified they really didn't do a true conflict check, because only Mr. Vervink and Infinity Custom Plastics, or ICP, were listed on the conflicts check. Now, they knew Al Sankrey was chief operating officer of the company, and they knew under the law, because they testified so in their deposition, that they had a duty to deal with the authorized representative of the corporation. The individual attorney was the incorporator, a different incorporator from the one that did Avery Wholesale Pharmaceuticals. But the vial technology that ICP was going to deal with already belonged to Avery. And Avery's employee had created this vial technology, this new way to seal these medical vials. But Al Sankrey and Avery were not listed on the conflicts check. The next thing that happened that Haynes and Boons knew about and Al Sankrey did not know about, they drew up a contract supply agreement involving this new independent corporation of Mr. Vervink's and Avery Pharmaceuticals. What Avery used to do is Avery would purchase their vials from a Florida company. And I believe they paid 6 cents a vial. I may be a couple of cents off, but they paid so much a vial. Well, they concocted this scheme to where they would buy the vials that already belonged to Avery. Avery would buy them from ICP for 4 cents or some such lower amount. You know, I'm an English major, so bear with me on the facts are in the brief. But what happened was there was going to be a profit on this contract. Well, the problem with that was there was no benefit to Avery Pharmaceuticals, because Avery could not get out of this contract, but Mr. Vervink could. ICP could. So that was another thing that happened. Now, Al Sankrey testified that when we started discovery in this case and after the sale of the business, that's when some of these things through documentation production really became evident. And he did not know of the value of the vial project, which they dispute. There was no profit because it was the invention was never finished. But that was after the sale to this third party in 2006, which didn't even affect us. But in any event, this is the next thing that happened. Once these dealings became a little bit known to Mr. Sankrey by a secretary that worked in the same building, and that's another thing too. This Fickling Straw agreement, where they were going to transfer these shares, they mailed it to a P.O. box in Bedford, Texas, because they say it was listed on articles of incorporation. Funny thing is, though, they keep wanting to tell us that Mr. Sankrey should have known everything because they worked in the same building. Then why didn't you walk up to Mr. Sankrey and say, hey, I'm not giving these shares to you. I'm violating the corporate documents, and I'm going to give these to Mr. Fickling. And one of the individual lawyers testified, I can't even promise you I got it in the mail. Okay, that's what it shows, which shows we sent it, but I can't tell you that I did that. I didn't send it by certified mail. I don't have any proof I mailed it. But in any event, here's what happened. January of 2003, big day. Mr. Sankrey has had enough. things are starting to develop. Now, he doesn't know that it's Haynes and Boone that's actively participating and concocting some of these things, but he's suspicious now that there's some kind of shenanigans going on with ICP and Mr. Vervink. So he goes and talks to one of the individual lawyers at Haynes and Boone. None of these individual lawyers are with Haynes and Boone to this date. This case has been going on a very long time. It's been before this court and Supreme Court, and none of the lawyers are with them anymore. But these improprieties, he alleged, were in the formation and the capitalization of these independent corporations for Mr. Vervink, who was their client, against the best interests of Al Sankrey and Avery Pharmaceuticals, who were also their clients. Albeit that it's disputed, again, that Mr. Sankrey was a client. It's not disputed that Avery was a client or that he was their CEO. So he goes in there, and one of the individual attorneys, it doesn't really matter what their names are, but he drafts a memorandum the following day, and I'm not sure what it says because it wasn't produced, and that was the subject of another mandamus, but in any event, he says in his testimony, we anticipate litigation.
Ms. Schultz, your time is up. Can you wrap up your thought, please?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. I'm sorry. There are just so many facts involved in this case. What we really want the court to do is reverse and remand this case for a jury trial on these business transactions, which are so complex and show so much misconduct, that to immunize Haynes and Boone would really be detrimental to the trial system and to our client. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schultz. Mr. Searcy.
May it please, Your Honor. First, may I congratulate my opponent on her dedication, scholarship, and eloquence in the wake of very difficult circumstances. But I must say that I was somewhat reminded, despite the eloquence of my adversary, of a quote from Winston Churchill in describing Neville Chamberlain arriving at Parliament, that an empty cab arrived at Parliament today, and Mr. Chamberlain alighted from the cab. And even though there's very able counsel that presented a very eloquent argument, that argument, I fear, alights from an empty cab for four reasons that I wish to discuss today. But first, let me just kind of hone in on what this case is about. And I'm not here to argue facts because, obviously, this is a summary judgment case. What this case is really about is two owners, Mr. Al Sankrey and Mr. John Vervink, of a closely held business, Amos Avery Pharmaceuticals, became unhappy with one another. Ultimately, they sued each other. Their lawsuit was settled in May of 2003, with the parties generally releasing not only each other, but Avery Pharmaceutical and all the privies of these parties, based upon anything that happened in the formation or operation of Avery Pharmaceutical. After the settlement of that lawsuit, in fact, on the very day of the settlement of that lawsuit, Avery sold all of its assets, including all of its causes of action and all of its intellectual property, and ceased business operations. Apparently dissatisfied with the outcome of the lawsuit and the ensuing sale of assets to Discount Rx, Mr. Sankrey and the now fictional Avery, and understand Avery conducts no business operation, has no assets, no employees, it's just a litigating fiction, sued the lawyers on the very same claims that had been basically brought against Mr. Vervink in the settled litigation. And as we'll show, these recast claims simply do not work as a matter of law. And I respectfully submit to you on behalf of my clients, who I'm very proud to represent, and I think that sometimes there's a bellicose rant that's raged against them, but on behalf of my clients, I think policy dictates that these claims not be good as a matter of law, because otherwise it casts lawyers in the role of referee, and there's nothing wrong with a lawyer being a referee, but cast lawyers in the role of a referee of internecine into intramural disputes between corporate owners, and then tries to make them financially responsible, and in this case to the tune of $38 million, a ruinous amount, a responsibility that's not theirs. and makes legal services priced out of the ballpark and legal services unattainable. Public policy shouldn't cognizance that. Now, there's four reasons that the trial court was correct in sustaining the motion for summary judgment. I have handed out to the panel a outline of my argument. I'll be referring to it at time to time during the course of it. It's basically a PowerPoint without much power, just the slides themselves. But there are four reasons. First, the first reason the trial court was correct is Mr. Sankrey, who was never a Haynes and Boone client, had no standing to assert a malpractice or fractured fiduciary duty claim against Haynes and Boone. Secondly, Avery similarly had no standing because it had assigned all of its purported claims to Discount RX. And both Sankrey and Avery had released their purported claims against Haynes and Boone. And finally, there was simply no evidence that linked any damages or causation to the fanciful and frankly astronomical amount of $38 million that the plaintiffs were seeking in the trial court. I have listed in one of the slides 4 through 7, a brief outline of the facts. I will not discuss those. I don't have time. And besides, that's not why I'm here. We're here on a summary judgment. But I do put those out there to somewhat show, and these are put forth, I think, in an unargumentative fashion, what the real circumstances were. So let me turn to the first point, that is, Mr. Sankrey had no standing because he was not a client of Haynes and Boone. As a matter of law, Haynes and Boone had no duty to a non-client. The issue of duty, as we all know, is a question of law. The absence of privity deprived Mr. Sankrey of any standing to bring any claim. The question of standing is likewise a question of law. As a matter of law, these claims of Sankrey, legal malpractice and breach of fiduciary duty, were invalid and properly dismissed. There can't be any issue as to what Mr. Sankrey understood. He admitted in his deposition, and his admissions are at slide 10 in the handout I've given to you, his admissions, he admitted, I never retained anyone from Haynes and Boone. I didn't retain Mr. Price. I didn't retain Mr. Eaton. I didn't retain Mr. Nafee. I never retained Haynes and Boone to represent me personally. Moreover, every witness that testified in this matter corroborated that. Mr. Sankrey, in opposing the motion for summary judgment, didn't file an affidavit disavowing his deposition admissions. Every defendant denied under oath ever having represented Mr. Sankrey. Mr. Sankrey admitted that Mr. Eaton and Haynes and Boone had specifically told him that they wouldn't speak to him because he was not their client in January of 2003. Most importantly, in every transaction that Haynes and Boone was involved in and encountered Mr. Sankrey, he was represented by separate counsel. First by Robert Shepard, then by Neil Calloway, then by Kevin Kinsley, and finally by Georgia Terrace. So this response that somehow or another Mr. Sankrey had a subjective belief that was not ever expressed to anyone, that somehow or another Haynes and Boone was his lawyer, to use the words of my 10-year-old son, which I love to use on occasions, is, quote, lame, because Mr. Sankrey admitted he didn't believe Haynes and Boone was his lawyer. Why should Haynes and Boone assume otherwise? Haynes and Boone told him that they didn't represent him. Why should they assume otherwise? Sankrey was represented by a veritable army of his own lawyers. Why should Haynes and Boone assume otherwise? So let me turn now to the Avery assignment. Avery conveyed any claim it might have had against Haynes and Boone to Discount RX in May 2003 and thus no longer had standing to bring the claims it is asserted. Douglas versus Delp, Baker versus Malleus. Avery, of course, is not a real business. It's a litigating fiction. The language of the assignment that transferred away the claims to Discount RX is clear and unambiguous, and it is at slide 16 in the presentation I've given to you. All claims for relief, causes of action of any kind or character are assigned from Avery to Discount Rx in May of 2003. Now, I heard Ms. Schultz tell us that no one was aware of the claim. Well, of course, that's not true. Because Mr. Sankrey confirmed in his deposition, first, and this is his slide 18, that he was aware that all claims were assigned. He admits that in his deposition. Moreover, he admits in his deposition that everyone that he knew about the claims against Haynes and Boone at that time, but for some reason, he was kind of holding them in his back pocket. And again, I think that is at slide number 19, slide 19. Where he admits that not only did he know the claims, but they were assigned away.
What about their claim that the causes of action against Haynes and Boone are unassignable?
Well, of course, that would not apply to anything except the legal malpractice claim. So everything else we can put aside. All the other, if you'll excuse me, the fractured bones of this malpractice claim that they've tried to fracture, we can put aside. Those are assigned away. Now let's talk about the malpractice claim. In Gandy versus State Farm and follow on in Zuniga and the follow on cases, all of the courts have talked about the public policy against the assignment of legal malpractice claims. And since I regularly represent lawyers, I'm not here to be an advocate or changing that at all. But, as Justice Heck in his concurring opinion in Baker versus Malleos, and in the separate concurring opinion in Baker versus Malleos, made clear, it applies only to those legal malpractice claims that would involve a nasty change in position. And let me give you an example. Say I am a plaintiff in a case against a defendant, and I succeed in that case. And unfortunately, that defendant is impecunious, and I cannot collect on that claim. I then take an assignment from the defendant of his malpractice claim against his lawyer. I then have to change positions and say, I really never had a claim against this defendant, and he only lost because of the negligence of his employer, but I've now changed my mind on that, and I've made a tawdry change in position. That's what the law abhors. That is not this case at all, as Judge Walker so plainly pointed out, and as all the concurring opinions in Baker versus Malleos pointed out. That tawdry change of position is not involved in this case, and it does not cover this case. So this assignment assigned away not only all of these fractured claims of negligent misrepresentation and fraud and every kind of evil you can imagine, but the malpractice claim as well, because it does not involve that tawdry change in position. And they acknowledge that the assignment occurred. After this case was pending, they suddenly realized they didn't own the claim anymore, went to the Discount RX, tried to get the claim, couldn't get it. Then on the eve of the second hearing on a motion for summary judgment, tried to put in that there'd been some retransfer back. If one were worried about commerce in legal malpractice claims, the commerce lies on the other side. And it's a very bad situation to encourage that type of commerce in claims. A bad situation indeed, where we don't know who owns the claim from one day to the next. So, Avery has no standing, Mr. Sankrey has no standing, but even if they did, they released away the claim. Now, the trial court didn't specifically rule on this, but you're here on a summary judgment that you can affirm on any basis that you find in the record that would justify it. And this release language does. When Mr. Sankrey sued Mr. Vervink in May of 2003. That litigation was concluded by a triangulated settlement whereby Sankrey released Vervink, Vervink released Sankrey, and both released Avery. and their agents and representatives, which we say includes their attorneys. The language is unambiguous, it's clear, and it covers these parties. Finally, let me close, and I notice that my time is almost up. Let me close by simply saying that even if you could ignore everything else, there is absolutely no evidence in this record that would causally link any of the bellicose ranting against these gentlemen from Haynes and Boone about what they did or didn't do with any causal damages. Because remember, it's all based on this idea that this vile technology, and that's V-I-A-L, not V-I-L-E, vile technology was going to be a multi-million dollar enterprise. Well, they transferred that away to Discount RX in May of 2003. It's all based on the proposition that it's going to be patented. Well, the patent was applied for, but specifically denied. It's all based upon a bunch of suppositions that is one supposition upon another, that has no basis, in fact, and is totally fictional. And more importantly, it is not causally linked to anything Haynes and Boone did or didn't do. They complain about the Fickling contract. Well, Mr. Sankrey ended up with all the stock anyway, and then all the assets of the company were sold. They complain about this contract supply agreement, but they never explained to the court not a single product was purchased or sold under that contract. We also ask, thank you, Your Honors.
You finish your sentence, please.
Well, I was just going to add that policy really demands this. It really does. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Searcy. Ms. Schultz, rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel for Haynes and Boone. This court's vision should not be blurred by the lawyers Haynes and Boone's attempt to distort the facts, which are many, which are disputed, to expand Texas law and allow Al Sankrey and Avery's legal malpractice and pendant claims, alternate theories, to be assigned away, released away, or any other affirmative defense which they want to use to immunize themselves from any responsibility for their dealings and misconduct in this case. It's truly myopic, their vision. What they want is full immunity, and they say, well, he ended up with all the stock anyway. Well, I just have a question. If you rob a bank and you give the money back, are you still guilty? That's my question. They don't want this court to focus on the facts. As to the release, this is what the release was about, and it's set out in the brief. It was not a recast claim. It was executed in a separate cause of action involving Al Sankrey and John Vervink over $180,000 debt owed. Not one of the Haynes and Boone's lawyers were specifically named or even generally referenced as attorneys or legal representatives in the release. The underlying cause of action was Al Sankrey versus A&R. It was another one of Al Sankrey's concocted companies where they took money out of Avery and almost got away with keeping the money. It was a compromise and settlement agreement signed on May 14th, entered into in a cause of action styled Al Sankrey versus A&R Pharmacy, Inc., a.k.a. Airway Relief Pharmacy. Did not have anything to do with this case. That is a smokescreen. The cases that they cite, they keep talking about fracturing, and I think it's quite clear, and this court has much experience in assignments and legal malpractice and writing, members of this panel have written in the Traver case about assignment of legal malpractice causes of action. Other members of this panel have spoken to the fraud issue. Other members of this panel have talked about fracturing. This panel is well aware of the law in this case. It's the facts that require your close scrutiny. I'd like to point the court to attention to the case 178 Southwest 3rd 40, the Green Pressure case versus Fulbright, also in our brief, reply brief at page 19. You have to have an intent to transfer in any event. Number two, it's not our burden that we failed in. It's Haynes and Boone's burden that they failed in. That's the Sotelo case, which I will submit in the reply brief to this court, the letter brief, excuse me. And if I may, I guess I need a time so that I'm...
What we usually do is give each side 10 days. In other words, you would have the opportunity to file a post-submission brief within 10 days of your oral argument, and then opposing counsel would have 10 days to file one in response to yours.
And with permission of the court, they're evacuating us again tomorrow Ike.
Okay.
15 days, please.
Let's do 20 then, okay. 20 and 20. How about that?
I just live in the wrong place in Texas.
I understand.
The last thing is they keep saying the Malios case supports their position. That's the Texas Supreme Court in the Fairfield case that I cited to the court gives their last thought, so to speak, on assignment of legal malpractice causes of action. They haven't changed their endorsement that says that's not the policy they want to take in the state of Texas, although it is in dicta. And in Malios, it's the same thing. They still endorse the public policy considerations against assignment. We would ask that the court look at the facts in this case and not give Haynes and Boone's immunity for their conduct. There are damages. They're set out in the brief. We've mentioned some of them to the court. It is too fact extensive. And we want them not just to be able to give the money back that they took. My analogy, robbing the bank, we want responsibility too. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schultz. Thank you, Mr. Searcy. We appreciate both of your all's arguments and all of your briefing in this rather complex matter. You are excused.
Thank you.